You are listening to Lowell Association for the Blind's LAB Radio. LAB Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network, your main source of accessible community news and information. We're located in Lowell, Massachusetts, and read local news, editorials, feature stories, and more. LAB Radio is brought to you by volunteers and staff of the Lowell Association for the Blind. I am Jean Creedberg, and with me is...
Ken Creedberg. Good morning.
And Ken and I will be reading to you this morning from the Lowell Sun of Sunday, March 1. The top story in yesterday's paper, Police Captain Takes Home Top Pay. And there is a picture of the Lowell Police Department at JFK Plaza on February 27th. The picture was taken. 56 city employees made more than $200,000. By Peter Currier. An analysis of the 2025 City of Lowell payroll showed most of the top earners in the city were in the Lowell Police Department, with the city's highest overall earner for the year being a police captain who made more than $300,000. That top earner was Captain Daniel DeMaris, who took in a grand total of $308,101 for the calendar year. That figure is more than double DeMaris's base salary of $153,190, with most of the compensation coming from $43,669 for overtime, $68,815 of special police detail pay, $25,219 in vacation pay, and a combination of sick pay and personal days, sick leave payback, and additional holiday pay. That grand total tops even the total compensation of Lowell Police Superintendent Gregory Huden, who took home $265,897. Came from his base salary. In Hudson's case, the majority of the difference is made up through $29,838 of vacation pay and $11,864 in holiday pay. Most of the top 10 earning city employees are police captains. Alongside DeMaris, that includes Captain Thomas Siopes at $288,638 total compensation, Captain Michael Kilmartin at $280,413, Captain Guillermo Royas at $277,018, Captain Aidan O'Donnell at $269,588, and Captain David Peasley at $267,427. While each receives a very high compensation, City Manager Tom Golden told The Sun on Friday, the impact to the taxpayers is actually less than it would appear. The money for overtime pay for each of the police captains and many other uniformed police in Lowell comes from the city's general fund. However, a significant portion of those sums come from special police detail pay, which is not paid out of the city budget. Private detail work, which is paid for by private companies, an example would be National Grid, this money is not paid for by the general fund or the taxpayer, said Golden in an email Friday. There are other areas where Lowell police are paid out of funds that do not impact the taxpayer and usually come from grant funding, Golden said. Special state or federal grants that are geared towards youth prevention, traffic enforcement, or other special law enforcement operations, distracted driving, clicket or ticket, gang or youth services, safe and successful youth initiative, Shannon Grant, to work with organizations like UTEC and Boys and Girls Club. Once again, this is not paid for through the general fund. Though Lowell's police generally were the top earning overall in the city last year, they were not the only department that employees near the top of the list. City Manager Tom Golden has been in his role since 2022. Last year, he earned a gross total of $268,058, which began with a $224,584 base salary. Golden's total included $21,667 in vacation pay, $12,277 in holiday pay, and a combination of retroactive pay, sick pay, and personal pay. Out of the top 50 earners in the city government in 2025, just two worked in Lowell Public Schools. One of them happened to be the second highest earner at $298,593, Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources and Operations, James Hall. Lowell Public Schools spokesperson Jen Myers said in an email Friday that Hall oversees human resources, the cafeterias, facilities, and transportation in the district, in addition to collective bargaining, council duties for the district. Hall's total compensation comes from a base salary of $219,754, with $64,963 coming from vacation pay. The rest came from a combination of retroactive pay, stipends, and a school travel allowance. The other top earner in Lowell Schools was Superintendent Liam Skinner, who stepped into the role in 2023 as an interim superintendent before later getting the nod for the permanent role. Skinner took home a total of $236,342, but he had a rather narrow gap between his gross total pay and his base salary, with a $3,600 school travel allowance and $88 in retroactive pay on top of his $232,653 base pay. Like with the police, the Lowell Fire Department's top earner was not the head of the department last year. The highest paid member of the fire department was Deputy Fire Chief Timothy Casey, who earned a base pay of $125,606, but took home $245,943 for the year after getting $57,461 in overtime, $16,936 in vacation time, $18,460 in hazardous material compensation, and the rest coming from sick and personal days. Fire Chief Philip Charon, who was not far behind, though, with $193,465.53 in base pay, rising to a total of $232,358 after factoring in vacation, sick, and holiday pay. When including all forms of compensation, even that not paid directly by the city, there are 56 city employees who made more than $200,000 last year. While a sizable portion of the pay for the top earners comes from special detail pay not paid by the taxpayers, the city is still facing a crunch to the fiscal 227 budget, in part due to increases in fixed costs and things like the $418 million debt service on the Lowell High School project. Part of that may be mitigated by a fee increase in the solid waste and recycling program from the city, but the city is bracing for the possibility of layoffs and hiring freezes if the outlook comes out to be as bad as expected. Ken?
Thank you, Jeannie. And now I'm going to be reading from the Lowell Sun, Sunday edition, I'm going to be reading the column. Elliott bows out of re-election bid. State Representative Rodney Elliott is bowing out of politics after 28 years, announcing he will not seek re-election to the state legislature in the fall's election, thus further stirring an already roiling cauldron of local political activity. Elliott, who has represented the 16th Middlesex District in the legislature since 2022, upended local politics with his announcement this week. His decision comes less than a month after he lost a special primary election to succeed the late state senator Edward Kennedy. It has been one of the greatest honors of my life to serve the people of this great city as your mayor, city councilor, and state representative for this district for the last 28 years in office, Elliott wrote in a statement. During my time in office, we have faced serious challenges and meaningful opportunities. Together, we have worked to strengthen schools, support economic development, build housing, protect public safety, and ensure that our city and state remain a place where opportunity is within reach for everyone. I am proud of what we have accomplished, not as individuals, but as a community committed to progress, Elliott wrote. Elliott lost the Democratic primary to fellow state representative Vanna Howard of Lowell, who was favored to win that Senate seat in the March 3rd special election. She is facing Republican candidate Sam Meas, who is resident of Lawrence, according to the printed ballot, and independent Joe Espinola of Dracut. If Howard wins the March 3rd special election, that will trigger a contest to replace her as the representative of the 13th Middlesex District. The 17th Middlesex District encompasses Lowell, Dracut, Tingsboro, Pepperell, and Dunstable. With Elliott stepping down and Howard potentially moving up, Lowell may have at least two new state representatives with the possibility of a third. State Representative Tara Hong is seeking re-election to the 18th Middlesex District seat, but City Councilor and former Mayor Sakari Chow is challenging him. Already a candidate is in the race to win the 17th Middlesex seat. Elliott was facing a challenge for Lorena Betts, a relative newcomer to politics. However, in the past year, she has become well known as a talented community organizer with a series of rallies and protests throughout Greater Lowell to her credit. The 17th Middlesex District includes Centralville and Pawtucketville in Lowell, North Chelmsford, and Chelmsford Center. Betts lives in Chelmsford. Elliott was a member of the Lowell City Council from 1997 to 2022 and served as mayor from 2014 to 2015. With Elliott no longer running, some Lowell political figures may be considering a run. Names mentioned include City Councilors Dan Rourke and Corey Robinson. And that part of the column was written by Prudence Brighton. Lowell, the City of Festivals. Former Lowell City Councilor Corey Belanger came before the License Commission Thursday night for a two special one-day alcohol licenses for the 2026 Lowell Winterfest. It's one of at least two times a year that Belanger comes before the commission for approvals in his role representing the Lowell Festival Foundation. Sometimes in June, Belanger will again appear before the body for at least 10 special one-day licenses to sell, dispense alcohol on the Lowell Folk Festival grounds. Belanger brings a lot of experience to the alcohol license concession. He was the owner and operator of the former Major's Pub, later rebranded to Wicked Irish Pub and Grill, in downtown Lowell for 15 years, from 2001 to 2016. More importantly, Belanger is one of the founders of Winterfest and serves on the City of Lights Parade Committee and the Lowell Festival Foundation Advisory Board, which is the fiscal agent for the Lowell Folk Festival. The city's premier festivals, including the recently concluded Winterfest, which kicked off Lowell's year-long bicentennial celebration, continues to be well represented by Belanger's efforts. And this part of the column was written by Melanie Gilbert. Army Vets runs for Fisher House. Brad Cassidy grew up in Westford and now lives in New York City, but he told the column that he is coming back to run his first Boston Marathon this April. Cassidy spent 6 years in the Army as an Army Ranger with the 2nd Ranger Battalion, including two tours in Afghanistan. Cassidy told the Sun that he is running the marathon to raise $15,000 for Fisher House of Boston, which provides free hostel-based lodging near Boston hospitals so military and veteran families can stay close while a loved one is in treatment. It removes a huge financial and emotional burden at a really tough time, he said, by email earlier this year. My hope is that sharing the story might both boost the fundraiser and spotlight Fisher House of Boston's work for families from across New England, including the Merrimack Valley. So far, the hometown hero has raised more than $10,000. I am an American veteran, and I know firsthand how hard the transition from service to civilian life can be, Cassidy said. Fisher House Boston steps in at exactly those fragile moments. They provide a safe place to stay, a warm meal, a short walk to the hospital in a community that says, you're not alone. That mission is personal to me. I run so we never leave behind those who gave so much. And this part of the column was written by Melanie Gilbert. The field grows for the third. Last week, we highlighted the entry of long-shot, unenrolled candidate Kevin, I hope I pronounce his name right, Ades, spelled A-D-E-S, into the race for the Massachusetts 3rd Congressional District seat currently held by U.S. Representative Lori Trahan. In the days since, two more names have entered the fold. Ades join the race as an unenrolled candidate meant for a second that Trahan was still without competition in the Democratic Party for her seat. But that has since changed. Joining the Democratic field this week was Hudson resident Gage Clark with a progressive platform of her own. She believes in reenacting the Glass-Steagall Act, Smith-Mund Act, overturning Citizens United, and rerouting the funding of ASFA back to families that will help bring back and strengthen the middle class, says Clark's campaign page detailing her core beliefs for governance. These policies that have demoralized most Americans and devastated our youth need to change. She is running on a platform of raising the minimum wage to $20 per hour, while the current federal minimum wage sits at a measly $7.25 an hour. She also calls for more programs to give pathways to home ownership, bolstering of community-based affordability health care options, overhauling the education system, stronger borders with a fairer immigration system, and a military that serves as a protector and not an invader. For now, at least, the Democratic primary for the 3rd Congressional District is between Trahan and Clark. Whoever wins that nomination will then face at least two other candidates in the general election, the unenrolled 80th and Republican Gary J. Grassi, who filed with the Federal Election Commission on Thursday. Precious little could be found online about Grassi and his platform, beyond that he ran a write-in campaign out of Acton for the 2024 Republican nomination for the 37th Middlesex District seat in the State House of Representatives, but failed to get enough write-in votes to qualify for the general election. That led to Democratic Danilo Senna winning the general election unopposed last year. Regardless of how much information is out there about Trahan's challenges, the past couple of weeks have turned what was going to be another snoozy, uncontested election into an actual competition, and there is still time for the field to grow. And this was written by Peter Currier. Archinsky isn't going anywhere. 5-term Drake at selectman Tony Archinsky fully intends to finish his current term, although for the next several meetings he will be a virtual presence. Archinsky faces a challenging schedule at Massachusetts General Hospital, where he is receiving cutting-edge treatment for chronic lymphocytic leukemia. He will most often be an outpatient, but at times an inpatient. One of his recent outpatient days at MGH did not end until 6 p.m. Drake at selectman meetings start at 6 p.m. Archinsky was first diagnosed with CLL in 2015 and has had 3 rounds of chemotherapy since then. But cancer therapies have a history of failing over time, and I have had 3 failed therapies over the years, he told the son. The treatment he is receiving is called CAR-T. It's been available for some blood cancers since 2017, but for CLL, it was approved only 2 years ago. His doctors are confident in his treatment. One of the doctors told them, this really works. Achinsky told the Sun he recently completed phase 1 of CAR-T immunotherapy, where some of his own T cells were removed and sent off to a lab to be genetically altered to better recognize and kill cancer cells. While he waits for the altered cells to come back from the lab, he will be making almost daily visits to MGH for traditional chemotherapy in preparation to receive his new cells when they are ready. He told the Sun he is looking at mid-March for completion of therapy, and then several weeks of recuperation will follow. Waist-deep in February. The nearly 300,000 Bay State households snowed in and without power following the blizzard of 2026 were probably too busy to keep tabs on the revamped House energy bill that passed Thursday night. Taxpayers living on the South Coast and Cape Cod were after more instant relief, as more than 3 feet of snow and high winds toppled trees and thwarted the progress of work crews assigned with restoring power. Mid-blizzard, Governor Maura Healey declared from the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency bunker in Framingham a rare travel ban Monday afternoon for Plymouth, Bristol, Barnstable, and Dukes counties. Violations were punishable by a $500 fine, but the governor said the real intent was to expedite the cleanup. Healey said she couldn't compare this storms to the historic blizzard of 1978, when she was just 7 years old and her birthday party was canceled. When she lifted the ban on Tuesday, she hit the road to check on storm recovery efforts on the Cape. She also tweeted a video of a convoy of Vermont plows coming to rescue here. New York also sent equipment. There's $35 million for snow and ice removal this year's budget, according to the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. And some of that was used up in the big January snowstorm. State law also gives MassDOT $50 million worth of deficiency spending authority. Annual budget hearings were on hiatus this week, but it looks like lawmakers may need to shovel out more cleanup cash, as they often budget light in that area. The storm forced the legislature, which was required to convene at least every 72 hours, to be out of session for 6 days, its longest break since 2015. House Speaker Ron Marinaro and Senate President Karen Spilka broke free from the snowbreak at the downtown Boston Forum hosted by Masterlist and State House Service. top Democrats spoke candidly about their ballot questions concern and took personal jabs at State Auditor Diana DeSoglio. Master List columnist John Keller asked Marinaro, "You don't like referendum questions in general, correct?" Marinaro offered a clear reply, "No." The Quincy Democrat also took issue with DeSoglio and Secretary of State Bill Galvin for even being involved with two ballot campaigns. "There's something wrong with the system we have," Marinaro said. Spilka opposed the ballot measure to cut the income tax from 5% to 4%, saying the campaign is sponsored by millionaires. The Ashland Democrat also alleged that another question to set a new revenue collection gap to trigger taxpayer rebates would cost close to $2 billion, although her office wasn't able to explain how she reached that significant conclusion. Spilka and Marinaro both indicated they don't trust DeSoglio, a former state representative and senator who's long sought to audit the legislature under the 2024 voter law, and before that clash with legislative leaders on a range of topics. Spilka called DeSoglio a headline hunter, serving up her own fresh headline in the long-running spat. Attorney General Campbell Andrea last week attempted to strike the auditor's lawsuit against top lawmakers, which DeSoglio partly filed to secure representation with a special assistant attorney general. Campbell's motion to intervene makes her a defendant alongside Spilka and Mariano, and her office is defending the two powerful legislative leaders. DeSoglio then filed a motion Wednesday requesting more time to respond. With the elongated school break now officially over, both branches were back in action on Thursday. The Senate passed the Bright Act, a bill that dictates income surtax revenue to finance $3.28 billion in long-term capital investments at public colleges and universities. The legislation, originally filed by Healey, now seems headed for a conference committee to resolve differences with a version the House passed in November. Senate Ways and Means Chair Mike Rodriguez needed help from the legislature aide to make the trip to the State House from snowy Westport. "I don't remember the last time I was so excited about coming into session," Rodriguez told reporters ahead of the vote. "I mean, I was waist-deep in snow when I left my house." Eversource predicted nearly all of its customers would have power back by midnight. Excuse me. A different energy discussion unfolded in the House as representatives passed a bill 128-27 to slash MassSave's budget by $1 billion and return utilities' alternative compliance payments to taxpayers. Environmental advocates worried the MassSave cut may devastate the energy efficiency program. The Group Insurance Commission put the brakes on costs shifting measures that would have raised members' co-pays and deductibles. The board voted 10-7 to eliminate coverage for GLP-1 weight loss drugs to save the cash-strapped agency roughly $46 million. The action hews to what Healy advocated for in a Monday letter. Massachusetts teachers could face a new penalty under an anti-strike strategy offered by Education Board Vice Chair Matt Hills. He wants state officials to waive the 180-day school year requirement when illegal strikes are to blame for missed days, a tactic that would prevent teachers from recouping their pay on make-up days. Looking ahead to warmer days when there might be rain instead of snow, the Massachusetts Water Resources Authority Board voted Wednesday to advance a draft plan that staff say would eliminate weather-induced combined sewer overflows into the Charles River, Mystic River, and Aylwolf Brook, a spokesperson said. Frustration has not thawed from environmental advocates who contend untreated sewerage would flow into the water bodies during intense rainfalls. Charles River Watershed Association Director Emily Norton said advocates are disappointed that the MWRA voted to invest millions of taxpayer dollars in an outdated system. In this part of the column was written by Allison Kuznets, State House News Service. And that's the column for this week, Jeannie.
Okay, glad you made it through, Ken.
Thank you.
Continuing or returning to the front page of the Lowell Sun of Sunday, March 1, another lead story, as I think was mentioned in the column also, but A Life of Sharing, Louis Pedroso, I'm at Peace. Lowell philanthropist honored by family and friends as he battles cancer. And there's a very large color picture of Louis Pedroso and his family, the 2025 Fortaleza Incorporated Gala. And from left are his niece, Ashley Costa, his older sister, Maria Silva, her twin sister, Luisa Dennis, and nieces Megan Dennis and Amanda Vaga. And another picture shows Louis with his siblings and late mother in a 2014 International Institute American Dream Award ceremony. It shows his sister Maria, Louis Pedroso, his mother Amelia Pedroso, his twin sister Luisa Dennis, and his brother Paulo Pedroso. A lot of people will know little about the kind of legacy they are leaving behind or how people will remember them after the conclusion of their lives. After a lifetime of service to others, the friends and family of Louis Pedroso wanted to make him an exception to that rule. Louis spent much of his life in Greater Lowell, but it did not begin there. He was born in the Azores Islands region of Portugal. His mother moved around multiple times in his youth, first to Angola, then back to the Azores, and then to a dairy ranch in California, where he worked for a few years. After his father became sick with leukemia, they returned to the Azores, where his father died when Louis was 14. Soon the family returned to the United States after finding no future in their homeland and settled in Massachusetts, which led to Louis eventually graduating from Lowell High School and building his life in Greater Lowell. He was a young immigrant ready to make his American dream. In 1984, when Louis was just 24, he founded Qualitronics, an electronics manufacturing company in Lowell that would serve as one of the first of countless examples of him lifting others toward the same American dream. His company created a product, but more importantly, it created a place where many immigrants like him could get their foot in the door of the American workforce. Louis sold Qualitronics in the year 2000, around the time of the dot-com crash, which made it a bad time to be in the electronics industry. He would return to the fold in 2004 and co-found a similar company, Accutronics, with his siblings, and later gave away 15% of his own stake to the company to his nieces and nephews. Between the two ventures, Louis facilitated stable employment and opportunities for more than 200 families, many of whom were immigrants before Accutronics was sold in 2023. His contributions to the world have turned into more than just the jobs he created, and over the course of his life, found every way he could to support people in need, whatever that need was. He was among those who founded the Greater Lowell Community Foundation, and he served as a trustee for the Theodore Edson Foundation. He also helped fund the Helio and Amelia Pedrosa Endowed Chair for Portuguese Studies at UMass Dartmouth as part of a commitment to preserving Portuguese language and heritage. This would later help launch the Portuguese Studies program at UMass Lowell. He was recognized for his work over the years with accolades like the Governor's Immigrant Award, a key to the city of Lowell, his induction into the Lowell High School Distinguished Alumni Hall of Fame, and the International Institute's American Dream Award. One of Louis's biggest impacts, though, has been on the success of small businesses just getting themselves off the ground. He would often provide these businesses with commercial space in his building, rent-free, for a year to 18 months, to help those businesses develop without as high a cost burden. Caribbean Bakery in Lawrence was one such business, as was Lowell's Invesaware and Charlie's Auto Village in Pelham, New Hampshire, among many others. Louis's drive to help others was born out of a simple philosophy he has carried his entire life. "A lot of people call it giving back," Louis told the Sun Thursday evening in a phone call from his Pelham home. "I can't call it giving back because I never got anything, so I call it sharing." As much as Louis has gone out of his way for others over the past 15 years, he has been fighting his own battle with a rare form of cancer, gastrointestinal stromal tumors. To this point, he had been managing the disease as well as possible, with three different surgeries in 2011, 2018, and 2021 to remove tumors growing within him. Now, 66, Louis has given the heartbreaking news from the doctor that his battle is nearing its end, as it was discovered that the tumors had moved into his liver. The decision was made for Louis to enter hospice care for the rest of his time, which he said may be only days to weeks. His twin sister, Louisa Dennis, moved in with him in Pelham to be close and help care for him in his final days, and it is now a daily routine for his friends and family to visit him in evenings after work. Despite the heartbreaking reality, Louis carries an acceptance for his situation. "I accept that I am being called, and when you are called, you can't say no," said Louis. "Everyone is going to go someday. People just don't know where they are in line. I, however, know I am at the end of the line." Even in his last days, Louis still thinks about the people he has helped locally and beyond other borders. One of the initiatives he has been most proud to support has been the Rwanda Youth Partnership's Rungano Nadota initiative, which supports hundreds of youth in the East African country. Louis supported the youth there both monetarily and with mentorship, and felt compelled to help them because he saw a number of similarities between the way the Rwandan youth had to live and his own upbringing in the Azores. It is a matter of giving people a chance, of sharing the good fortune you had because you take nothing with you. So share as much as possible, said Louis. He successfully passed that mantra on to the next generation of his family. We don't give back, we share, said his niece, Amanda Varga, to The Sun Wednesday. Louis never married or had children of his own, but he still held a fatherly role for all his nieces and nephews, from helping with their homework or investing advice in providing them work experience. Working alongside him as an adult, I was amazed at what he did on a daily basis, what he did, how he invested in his business to make sure his employees are taken care of, said Amanda. Amanda said that she thinks of a true philanthropist. She thinks of her uncle. She said is someone who is excited and wants others to succeed and will do anything in his power to help people succeed. We have so many friends who, if Louis hadn't come in, their lives would be very different today, said Amanda. One of his nephews, Michael Pedroso, said Louis has always been there to help when you need it. But he remembered the small fun moments with his uncle, too. My memories are of Thanksgiving, coming around, playing board games, trivia, Monopoly, said Michael. He always won. Michael joked about seeing the different sides of Louis through the board games they played and their shared love for video games like World or Warcraft. Through that, Michael saw the fun side, and through the 16 years the two worked together, Michael saw the generous businessman. Vladimir Saldana is a friend of Louis, who has known him for 11 years. They first met when Saldana was trying to raise funds to make his own way to Rwanda for a delegation trip, but Saldana was about $1,000 short of his goal. Louis, unbeknownst to me, committed to funding the gap to get me there, said Saldana. That started their friendship, and the two worked together over the years on different philanthropic boards like the Parker Foundation. I saw his leadership in action and how much insight, direction he gave to philanthropy dollars in Lowell, said Saldana. Durante Olivia has known Louis for 36 years, having worked with him at Qualitronics before Louis advised Durante to start his own construction and remodeling business. This is tough for us. He is the type of person who, as soon as you meet him, you know he is kind, always interested in you and caring about the people around him, said Oliveira. To me, Louis has been a father, a brother, everything. His effects will be around for a long time, said Oliveira later. He is revered by all of us. As it became clear his time was short, Louis's friends and family organized a living celebration of life by getting local figures and people impacted by Louis to submit videos of them talking about and honoring his legacy. At the end, they ended up receiving more than 36 submissions. Among them was Massachusetts University of Massachusetts President Marty Meehan, who shared his message to Louis with the Sun. Meehan said he came to know Louis when Meehan was serving as a congressman. What impressed me most about Louis is that he never forgot where he came from or the people who helped him along the way. Success for him was never just personal. It was something to be shared, said Meehan. Louis has an extraordinary generosity and instinct for seeing what people need and stepping up, often quietly and without fanfare, simply because it was the right thing to do. He's a true champion of education in Lowell, in the public schools, at UMass Lowell, and through his work with the Greater Lowell Community Foundation, helping create meaningful opportunities for students and future educators alike, said Meehan later. Louis is a thoughtful leader and philanthropist, a successful and principled businessman, a generous mentor, and a proud advocate for his community in everything he does. Louis has even heard from the youth in Rwanda in his final days, including a letter and a poem from a graduate of the Rungano Nododa program, who now attends the University of Rwanda. Dear Louis, we write not with ink, but with hearts, for your silence gave us futures, and your kindness built our paths, said a portion of the letter from Felix Nizeyemana. You gave without asking, you planted without boasting, and now, though sickness shadows you, we stand strong because of you. God, hear these words we send, carry them across the oceans. Let him feel our gratitude, let him know our love. Louis, if heaven is real, it must open its gates for you. After a lifetime of quiet service to others, Louis said it was very humbling to hear from those who have seen his positive impact. It's difficult for me because I always take care of people, and now the shoe is on the other foot, and that's hard to accept, said Louis. With his friends and family around him and countless examples of a legacy that will extend far beyond his lifetime, Louis knows he is leaving the world better than he found it. I'm at peace, Louis said. Ken, might you have something?
Yes. And now I'm going to read one of the lead articles from the local news section of the Sunday Sun. And this column is entitled, Two Men Arrested After Allegedly Seeking Sex with 15-Year-Old in Lowell Sting. Undercover operation involving local state agencies resulted in arrest at hotel on Industrial Avenue East. And this column was written by Aaron Curtis. Lowell. A multi-agency law enforcement sting that police say was aimed at reducing the demand of child commercial sexual exploitation led to the arrest of two men accused of arranging to meet what they believed was a 15-year-old for sex at a Lowell hotel. According to a Lowell police incident report, Marcel Neto, age 45, of Lowell, and David Pascantilli, age 53, of Reading, each responded to an online commercial sex advertisement and separately arranged to meet someone they believed was an underage teenage girl. Instead, police said the men were actually communicating with an undercover officer as part of the operation, which, aside from the Lowell Police Department's Special Investigation Section, included the State Police High Risk Victim Unit and the Chelmsford Police Department. Neto and Pascatilli were charged with enticing a child under age 16 paying for sexual conduct with a child under 18 and attempting to commit a felony crime, with the crime identified as a rape of a child. In both cases, investigators posted an online advertisement for a fictitious escort and waited for responses to the listed phone number. According to police, an individual later defined as Netto texted the number on Wednesday and initiated a conversation that investigators said turned into sexual in nature. After a price of $120 to $130 was agreed upon, depending on the use of a condom, the undercover officer allegedly clarified with Netto that the person he believed he was speaking with was a 15-year-old. According to the incident report, the undercover officer told Netto, "I'm a little younger than my ad. Hope you're cool with that." To which Netto allegedly replied, "I'm good, baby." With the age established at 15, Netto allegedly continued the conversation and agreed to meet at a hotel on Industrial Avenue East, where officers had prepared a decoy room. When he arrived, he was taken into custody. Investigators said Netto agreed to speak with them afterward, stating he had been communicating with someone on Skip the Games, which the incident report states is commonly used website in the commercial sex industry, and came to the hotel expecting sexual contact. Police said he had $351 in cash at the time of his arrest. His phone was seized pending a search warrant. When Pascatilli responded to the fictitious report advertisement on Wednesday, the undercover agent told him that the person he believed he was communicating with was 15, almost 16, and not 19, as the ad had stated, according to the report. Police said Pascatilli indicated that was acceptable. Pascatilli then allegedly asked whether the person he was talking to was affiliated with law enforcement or any federal agency. The undercover officer replied that she was not. After agreeing to pay $100 for sexual contact, Pascatilli went to the hotel on Industrial Avenue East, where authorities took him into custody. Police said he had $883 in cash on him at the time. Like Netto, Pascatilli spoke with investigators afterwards.